Hi, I'm Nisha DeGehring, host of Good Things Utah, and I've been a longtime supporter of Todd's Belief Cast. I hope you find inspiration in the courageous stories shared by the amazing people Todd features on his show. The guests serve as shoulders for us to stand on, allowing us to see a little further and cultivate belief in oneself. Remember, you have the dignity and power to change. I encourage you to keep striving and believing in yourself. Enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Todd Sylvester with the Todd Inspires Belief Cast. Thanks again, as always, for tuning in week after week. My listeners and followers, thank you so much for promoting this. And it's easy, right, guys, because of the guests I bring on this show. It makes it easy. I bring amazing people on with amazing stories, and it just makes everything run smoothly. I've got the easiest job in the world doing this. I just get to sit back and listen to some amazing stories and conversations, and we're all edified by them. So thank you so much. Thanks to my sponsors. I can't thank you guys enough. Craig Swap and Associates, Wasatch Recovery, Thread Wallets, Maury Nutrition. I can't thank you guys enough for being a part of this. And then the music you're hearing at the beginning and at the end of this podcast is by my good friend Paul Cardall, who also has an amazing story, but he's an award-winning pianist. He's got 25 million active listeners every month. He's amazing. Thank you for letting me use your music. It means the world. And again, thanks to all my guests, you know, my previous guests. And today we have a returning guest for the third time, someone I look up to as a mentor, as a giant in my life. You'll hear me say often, I'm standing on shoulders of giants. That's why I can see a little further. And Dave Dorsher from the Other Side Academy is one of those giants in my life. So thank you for being here, Dave.
You're welcome, Todd. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You're the executive director of the Other Side Academy here in Salt Lake City, Utah. You also have another facility in Denver, Colorado. Your story is absolutely amazing. You're one of our frequent returning guest speakers here at Wasatch Recovery, and which is really unheard of in most treatment centers, if not all of them, where we bring in someone like Dave who just brings the hammer and at the same time even promoting the Other Side Academy. And quite honestly, we hope the ones that are not going to get it here go to your program, because we know that what they're going to get at your program, they're going to get life skills that will be there forever. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyway, I mean, the list goes on of what we could talk about here today, but I want to start off with something you have hanging in your office. this beautiful sign. I had the opportunity to speak at your place a little over a week ago, and you weren't there because you were at another event yourself. Mm-hmm. And I took this picture from your office because I thought, oh my gosh, this is totally Dave. Here's what it said, folks. If you're looking for someone to co-sign your BS and sugarcoat the truth for you, then don't ask me for advice. If you're trapped in the grip of addiction, I'm not going to baby you. I'm going to tell you that you're selfish, self-centered, ungrateful, and entitled. I'm not concerned with your feelings. I'm concerned with your life. You are not a victim, and if they keep babying you, they're going to bury you. I love the part where it says, I'm not concerned with your feelings. I'm concerned with your life. It actually brings a little tear to my eye, honestly. Mm. Why do you have that hanging in your office?
I wish I could own it as my own verbiage. But a good friend of mine came across it. And when he came to visit me, he brought that. And he said, here, Dave, this is for you. When I read it, I thought of you. This is you.
And totally.
And I read it and I thought, gosh, it certainly is. I'm just not that articulate, right? But it's spot on. I mean, we are stuck in this world right now of addiction is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And we can't seem to figure out how to solve the problem. Not that we'll ever completely solve the problem, but we're having a hard time even stemming the bleeding, if you will. Mm. And I think that line about, I'm not concerned with your feelings, one of the reasons, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that the problem has gotten so bad is we're more concerned with people's feelings than we are with the truth.
Yeah.
We are more concerned with people's feelings than we are with the truth. And if you want to help people, you have to tell them the truth. If you want to help yourself, you tell them what they want to hear. We are stuck in this in this cycle, at least in the last, it seems like the last 10 years, of, oh gosh, you can't say that, it's shaming. Well, listen, I was a drug addict for 27 years, spent a large portion of my adult life going in and out of prison.
Yeah.
Because I was a liar, I was a cheater, I was a thief, I was a manipulator, I was self-centered, I was self-seeking. I was all of those things in spades. I've had so many people powder my Southern exposure, right? And just right. sugarcoat stuff. Yeah. And it didn't work. I ate it up and I spit them out,
yeah.
manipulated the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Wasn't till I got to an organization called Delancey Street where my peers called me on the carpet.
Yeah.
They told me about myself, who I'd become up until the day that I had gotten there. And man, that resonated. I needed the truth. And if I felt some shame, shouldn't I? I was
right.
a drug addict for 27 years, tearing at the fabric of the community. I have three kids I didn't raise. I kicked down the street. I should feel a little shame over the choices I made in my life.
Right.
But we shy away from that now because we don't want to feel shame. Well, if you don't feel shame, how can you own your past?
Yeah. Yeah. And really, it's almost like a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Right? You know, your story is absolutely amazing. You have a TED Talk for those who don't already know that. You have an amazing TED Talk. You can look it up on YouTube or any other social platform out there. And I recommend anyone out here listening to go check that out, show it to your family. It's really good. Mm. And the language is really good too. So
yeah,
it's very family oriented,
yeah.
But you know, I wanted to ask you, Dave, cause you know, obviously people weren't telling you the truth in the beginning, or at least maybe they tried and you wouldn't listen or whatever it may be. But you even said it, people probably avoided telling you anything. They might've even been afraid of you. Is there some truth to what I'm saying there?
Well, I think there might be some truth in both of those.
Okay.
I think as I got older and, you know, and I was deep in the lifestyle, I think some people may have been afraid to tell me the truth when I was active in my negative behavior,
yeah.
if you will.
Right.
I think at the beginning, you know, when I was going to therapy and I was being told I have a disease and I'm always going to be sick and it's not my fault and I have trauma, I think all of those things are true. I did.
Yeah.
But I still knew the difference between right and wrong. And how long are we going to allow those things to dictate
yes.
our decision-making? And when is it trauma and when is trauma the excuse? And, you know, anybody that has trauma, please don't take this out of context. But oftentimes we latch on to these things and that's our reason to continue with the behavior forever going forward.
Yeah.
So I think at the beginning, you know, when they were telling me that it's not my fault, I'm sick, I have a disease, I'm always going to be sick, I bought into that for a minute. And that was my excuse to continue to use because I have a disease.
Right.
Today, I completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
Completely. Ultimately, it was a choice. Everything in my life I did was my choice. I chose to use, I chose to stop. I chose to sell drugs, I chose to stop. I chose to do this, I chose to do that. When you take ownership of every decision you make in your life, you can make monumental changes. But when it's not my fault and it's caused by this and she did this and my boss did this and my wife did this and my girlfriend did this, then it's everybody else's fault for the decisions I'm making. How am I ever going to change?
Right. Wow. I love that you say that because I agree with you too. And one of the things you've taught me and one of the things I teach my clients is the importance of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll often tell my clients, when you take full accountability, suffering stops.
Because
that's when change starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if I believe I have a disease, if we're being real here, because we're talking truth right now, that keeps me from taking full accountability.
Because
then I got something to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it doesn't mess us up when we're high and we're drinking, and it does. It causes brain damage, you name it. We get that, but at the same time, we know right from wrong. And I love it when you ask our clients, hey, who knows right from wrong? Raise your hand. And when their hands are up, you're like, well, what's the problem then? You know?
Right.
It's, we all know the right thing to do. Yes, sometimes we habitually go down the wrong road, but I love that you point that out. And at the Other Side Academy, you have something called, is it 200% accountability?
Mm-hmm.
Will you explain that? And again, more on what you feel about that?
I'm going to digress just
Please.
A little bit. I think when we talk about right or wrong, you know, every drug addict, past, present, and future, we all have the same two choices. There is no gray area. This is unequivocally true for every single drug addict. And if you think I'm wrong, then you're going to continue down this path of destruction and you're going to die.
Yeah.
Every drug addict has two choices to make. Continue to use, ask for help. Both of those exist 24/7.
Right.
We can choose to continue to use because that's the easy path, right? And we don't have to feel the pain of stopping.
Yeah.
Or we can choose to ask for help and go through that process of pain, right? But you're going to have to go through that process sooner or later. You're going to die, and then your family's going to be in pain. You're going to go to jail, and then you're going to be forced to stop.
Yeah.
Or you can choose to. I'm not saying that it's easy, because it's not, especially if your active addiction is in heroin or, you know, opiates. It's not easy. Heck, none of it's easy to quit.
Right.
But we all have that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And addiction, in my opinion, is a choice. If I never chose to use at a young age, I would not be here right now. I wouldn't have went to prison a bunch of times.
Sure.
And I ask people all the time. I was just doing a presentation in my office to a group of people, and even the news was there.
Okay.
I asked the news person, I said, "Do you want some heroin?" She goes, "No." I asked her assistant, "Would you like some meth?" He said, "No." I said, "It's pretty good." He goes, "No, I don't." I said, "What do the two of you just do?" They made a choice.
Yeah.
Then I said to one of them, "Ask me if I want some drugs." And the third person goes, "Do you want some drugs?" I said, "No, get out of my house."
Yeah.
I have boundaries.
Yeah.
And I do that for effect.
Yeah,
because
right.
Ultimately, especially once you've gotten clean, if you choose to use again, it's not because your disease kicked in. It's because something hurt your feelings, something made you mad, something got you upset. You thought it through. You had to think about who I'm going to call. If you've been clean for a long time, you don't even have that drug dealer's information anymore. You had to start making phone calls. You knew what you were going to do was going to break people's hearts. You knew you were going to break your sobriety, but you did it anyway. You made a choice to use again, knowing it was going to be detrimental to your present and your future, and you made the choice anyway.
Yeah.
That's not a disease. That's a moral issue.
Yeah.
And people don't like to hear that because then they have to take accountability for their moral compass. Nobody likes to take accountability for their moral compass. That is why the problem is getting worse.
Yeah.
So you ask about 200% accountability. It's one of our principles at the Other Side Academy. What 200% accountability means is this. Todd, I am 100% accountable for my own actions. If in my current role I do something wrong, I need to be accountable to what I've done and let the powers that be know what I've done. That's me being 100% accountable for me. Now, let's say you and I are together and we work together and you've done something wrong. I see you do it and I don't say anything. Am I helping you or hurting you?
You're hurting.
If I see you do something, it is my response. I'm not responsible for the decisions you make, but I'm responsible to say something if I see you do something that's wrong.
Right.
That's 200% accountability.
Hmm.
And when you learn to do that, right? And people are like, "Oh gosh, mind your own business." Well, not in the world we're in. You mind your own business, people die.
Yeah.
Right? You help mind their business, people live. It is incumbent upon us when we see people, especially in the recovery community, if you're at a treatment facility and they're doing something wrong, they're being sneaky, they're being manipulating, to let somebody know, because the next conversation that person has with them could save their life.
Yep.
Or they're going to continue compromising until they either use again or get kicked out and go out there and die the next time they use. 200% accountability is a principle that should be used in every family, every organization, every treatment facility, and all of our relationships.
Yeah.
I want people in my life that are going to call me on my flat spots, that are going to call me on my negative behaviors. Let me know what I can improve. Tell me when I'm falling short and allow me to do the same thing. If you want to grow and you want to improve, you can't do it without feedback.
Yeah. Feedback's your best friend.
It is your best friend.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah,
you remember that.
I learned that from you, brother. And I share that all the time, by the way. I've learned so much from you, Dave. I love talking to you, man. You just got such power. I love this. I'm so grateful to be sitting here with you right now. I got so many things I want to talk about. You said something to our clients here the other day. You were just here a couple days ago about trauma. And again, we're not trying to minimize anyone going through some hard times. We're not saying that that's the case, but you talked about how many people are here on earth on this planet. And you gave a percentage of this is how many people deal with trauma versus how many people use it as an excuse to blow up their life. Do you mind sharing that? I think it'd be important for them to hear this.
It's anecdotal in principle,
right?
But it's factual in reality, I guess is the best way I can put it.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is when I was 5 or 6 years old, I was in Riverside, California at my grandparents' house. I was outside. And if you remember when you were kids, those balsa airplanes came in a plastic package. You put the wood balsa wings on it.
Oh, yeah.
I was out throwing this in a trailer park. It was a really high-end trailer park for elderly couples. That's where my grandparents lived. And this man was washing his truck. And he called me over. He was a neighbor. I never knew him. And he set me on the back of the tailgate. And he proceeded to lay me back, and then I'll leave the rest alone to your imagination. I'm like 5 or 6 years old. I have no idea what's happening. Then I hear my parents calling me. It was time for dinner. So I run over. I remember telling my parents what happened. Now, that's traumatic, right? But sure. I was really young.
Yeah.
I know the cops got called. I don't have any idea how things played out. It's the only time something like that ever happened.
Right.
I've had other trauma in my life. I rolled my vehicle doing 75 miles an hour on the freeway 6 or 7 times, walked away from it. I've been beat to nearly the edge of my life by law enforcement while I was living the lifestyle. All those things are traumatic. I've been through breakups. I've got a lot of trauma in my life. But today, trauma doesn't own me. Trauma didn't own me then. I truly believe that we live in this world where, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, when you heard the word trauma, it's because there was a bad collision at the intersection and somebody's femur was sticking out of their leg.
Yeah.
Physical trauma.
Right.
Now it's called mental trauma. Everybody has it. There's 8 billion people on the planet, roughly 8 billion, give or take.
Yeah.
0.0000001% of those people have trauma. And of those of that 8 billion, every single human being has trauma. A far larger percentage of people don't use that have trauma. But I believe the academics have found this. There it is. There's the common thread. Well, it's more common not to use if you have trauma than to use.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to say it. And man, when I say that in groups,
people,
it ruffles feathers.
Oh, sure.
But think about what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you have 20 people in a room and all 20 people have trauma, but only one of those people use drugs, you have a higher percentage that don't.
Yeah.
So is trauma the true reason people use drugs, or is it a common denominator that we found that we can now key in on, and that means everybody with trauma is susceptible to drug use?
Right.
It's just
fascinating.
As I continue to unpack that, and I live in this space.
Right.
I'm 57 years old. I was a drug addict for 27 years. I've been out of, you know, drug-free for 18 and a half years. I've dealt with thousands and thousands upon thousands of drug addicts between Delancey Street and the other side Academy. And that's what I find to be true.
Yeah.
You know, and today, that trauma still exists for me. Those things still happen. But I call it life. Life happens. Life is going to happen to me again. At some point, I'm going to be driving through an intersection and I'm going to get T-boned from somebody that has no insurance on their car, and I'm going to be stuck with the bill. I'm going to be at a job. Yeah. I'll probably never be out of this job, but let's say I had a job someplace. I've been working there for 3 years. Someone with 90 days is going to get the promotion. I'm going to, you know, any number of things could happen. I'm going to get a phone call that one of my parents have passed away of a heart attack.
Right.
Stuff's going to happen. None of those things are going to lead me to use again.
Right.
I will not allow life/trauma back to drugs. I'm not going to allow today's narrative, as we talk about these things that cause people to use, to send me back to that lifestyle. It's just not true in the world I live in.
Wow. Very well said. Thank you for sharing that. You know, one of the things I love, there's so many things that you say that are so powerful, but one of the things that really stood out to our clients here even just recently is when you said, you've got to hug the cactus. Now, what does that mean for those who may not understand what that means? Like, you're telling people, hug the cactus. You got to be willing to, and if you visualize that, that'd be very painful, hugging
Absolutely.
A cactus. Like, it's poking you and it's... But what does that mean, and why do you tell us to do that?
If you think after 27 years of hardcore drug addiction, I have 3 kids that I was a sperm donor. I had them, but I didn't raise them. I kicked them down the street for other people to raise. I have hurt more people physically on the streets and in jails and prisons in the state of California than I can count, and been hurt by them.
Yeah.
There is so much to unpack there. Women who have just completely destroyed their lives, right, when they got involved with me when I was living the lifestyle. My family and my parents, who I stole from and just completely destroyed. People who tried to help me, who I kicked in the teeth, right?
Yeah.
And I say that implicitly and explicitly, right?
Yeah.
So there's so much I've done. That's who I became as a drug addict. That's who I became as a human being. If I'm not willing to hug the cactus and let those thorns poke inside of me and cause me pain, if I can't look at who I've become without making excuses for it, how in the heck can I get to a better place? How can I change if I can't own who I was? I want that to land.
Yeah.
If at 30 or 40 or 50 years old, having lived the lifestyle of a drug addict where you're ripping and running and you're destroying people's lives and you're stealing from people that you claim you love and you're destroying relationships and you're kicking your kids down the street for other people to raise while you're making other poor choices, if you can't own that, own it for what it really is, that that is who I became, how can you expect to ever become somebody else? You can't become somebody else if you don't own who you are at that time. Then there's nothing to change.
Right.
Then there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say that there was nothing wrong with me. And Todd, it's fascinating. I get a lot of people when I do presentations that go, Dave, gosh, Dave, you're so hard on yourself. You made some mistakes. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. If I forget to set my alarm tonight and I wake up late, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
Todd, if you and I are driving down the street and having a conversation in the car on the way to lunch and in a heated conversation, which I have a tendency of having, and I blow that light because I'm not paying attention, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
But the lifestyle I chose was not a mistake. I chose drugs. I chose to deal drugs. I chose to run guns. I chose to get in a high-speed chase. Yeah. I chose to hurt people in prison. Those are thought-out, calculated decisions that I chose to make. They're not mistakes. In the world I live in, internally, there is a difference between a mistake and a conscious decision to do the wrong thing.
Right.
When we want to call everything we've done that's wrong a mistake, then there's nothing to fix.
Right.
It was just a random mistake. Gee, that was wrong. Oh, won't do that again. Wrong answer.
Right.
Wrong answer.
Yep.
Unpack the bad choices you've made in your life, examine them, fix them, right? Learn to tell the truth, learn to be honest, learn to be responsible, learn to have integrity. I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
There's three things I look for in people that I'm going to allow in my life today. Intelligence, energy, and integrity. And if you don't have the third, the first two don't matter.
Right.
That's how I live my life today, right? It's really important that those three pieces are there, particularly the third one, because even if you're not intelligent, you don't have a lot of energy, but you have integrity, you're good.
Right.
You are good.
Yeah.
Not everybody's born with, you know, the energy that you or I have, right? Where we're just bouncing off the walls trying to do good. Not everybody is, but that doesn't mean they're not good.
Right.
But man, if you have integrity, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
If you don't, nothing else matters.
And for those who may not know what that means, would you explain what integrity is? Most people probably do, but there might be a few that don't.
Integrity means being the same person in every room you walk into.
Mm-hmm.
That you are the same person with your spouse as you are with your boss, as you are with the clergy, whoever you know, your beliefs are.
Yeah.
That you are with your doctor, that you are with your kids, that you are honest and forthright.
Mm.
It means that you do the right thing when nobody is looking.
Yeah.
Integrity means just being a good human being, doing the right thing no matter what. Even if it's the hardest thing to do.
That's a beautiful definition. That's powerful. And I would imagine when you say energy, is that like passion?
Yeah.
You know, someone who's passionate about life and about what they do.
Yeah.
Right? They show up to life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh, life is so short. We think it's long.
Yeah.
But in a blink of an eye, we're 60, 65, 70. Life's going to be, we're a speck. This place, the earth's been around for billions of years. We're only here for a nanosecond in comparison to that.
Right, it's nothing.
Everybody is placed on this earth, I believe, for a purpose. But that purpose isn't given to us. We have to create that purpose. What do we love? How can we add value? How can you, Todd, add value, which is what you're doing right now in your current role as a human being? How can I add value? What can I do to contribute to mankind? How can I help improve the human condition? What can I do to make the world a better place?
Yeah.
If you're not going through life like that, if all you're doing is getting up, going to work, getting $25 an hour, making $1,000 a week, paying your taxes, drinking beer on the weekends, going to work Monday, hating it, hating your job.
Yeah.
Before you know it, your life is gone. You've accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
What difference have you made? Right? And I don't want to, you know, for those who just go to work and that's fine, but there's so much more to life.
Yeah.
And in that, what I mean by that is service. What are you doing to serve your community, to serve your brothers and sisters, to help other people get to a better place? Energy, right?
Yeah.
Energy. It's fascinating how much energy we'll put into stuff that's not good for us,
right?
But we're not willing to put the energy into stuff that is good for
us. Yeah, you know, I saw something like, a crack addict will do whatever they can to get crack, and they'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just shifted that energy into something positive, go after whatever that is and you'll go get it.
Yep.
With the same fervor and the same whatever, right?
Yep.
You know, I know you're really big into service and how important that is. And even the Other Side Academy, that's one of your tenets and your beliefs. You know, I had a client, I want to share this with you, that shared this in one of my groups once, and it was so profound. And I've shared this quite a bit, so those listening to it right now, probably, here goes Todd again, but I'm telling you, I put it to my memory because I didn't want to forget it. And here's what he said. I tried to find myself I could not see. I tried to find my brother, or I tried to find my God. My God eluded me. I tried to find my brother. I found all three.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, dude, there it is. That's where it's at.
Yep.
And it goes back to that 200% accountability. If you're my brother, I'm going to make sure I'm calling you out on the stuff you should not be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would I want to see you crash and burn?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
It doesn't make sense. So why wouldn't I say something? Right? But again, I get it because people are like, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want them mad at me. You know, I'll often ask my clients, do you want to be respected or liked?
Mm-hmm.
And they all say, I want to be respected. I go, yeah, you say that, but what you really want is you just want to be liked.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you don't call someone out because you don't want them mad at you.
The more you're disliked,
right?
The more you're respected.
Right.
It's fascinating.
Isn't
how
that
it works.
Fascinating? Yeah. Because I think I even heard this from you. I'd rather be respected by one person than liked by 100.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're one who ain't, you're not afraid. Those who know you, I mean, you speak your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you came here a couple days ago, spoke your mind, you brought the heat and you brought the truth. And I want to talk about truth for a minute, because we talked a little bit off the air about, and we've already talked a little bit about that already, but why is truth, I guess, the foundation for change? And why is truth so important to you?
I think we've lost more lives in this space by avoiding the truth and sugarcoating the facts than we could ever account for. It just seems that today the narrative in our society is, oh, just be nice.
Yeah.
Well, being nice and being honest are completely different.
For sure.
I think that telling me the truth is being nice. I think sugarcoating something and trying to tell me something and not being honest with me about what you're trying to say is not being nice. That's being dishonest.
Yeah.
I ask people all the time about the current problems in our community having to do with drug addiction and homelessness and criminal behavior, right? Is the problem getting better or worse? And it is getting exponentially worse because we don't tell people the truth.
Yeah.
We don't. We're afraid to, out of the fear of hurting their feelings. Well, I would much rather hurt somebody's feelings with the truth than bury them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It is the truth. I mean, you've heard it 1,000 times. The truth shall set you free. There's a million different ways to say it.
Yeah.
But if you've got somebody like me that was at the heat of my drug addiction and the heat of my criminal behavior, and you did anything but tell me the truth, I am not going to change.
Yeah.
Right. I needed to know. You know, when I was in Delancey Street, my peers told me what a conniving, lying, manipulating, violent human being I had become. That doesn't mean I was that day, because I was at Delancey Street doing the right thing.
Yeah, right.
But that is who I'd become. I didn't go to prison for singing too loud in the church choir. You know what I mean? Right. They didn't pull me out of BYU for being a straight A student. I got arrested for being an animal.
Yeah.
I was a human animal. I was. And I own that today. I own it. That's who I'd become. That's why I am the person I am today, because I was able to own who I was yesterday. And you cannot get there without the truth. As long as we keep trying to pussyfoot around the truth,
right,
and make sure that everybody's feelings are adhered to and we don't hurt. Do you think for 1 minute the person you're dealing with that was breaking into people's homes and stealing their weapons to sell in the commission of a crime, that were accosting that lady crossing the street and stealing her purse, that were writing a bad check from dad's wallet for $6,000 to go buy a pound of meth, that broke into your home and tied up your family, do you think they cared about anybody's feelings?
Yeah.
Stop pretending like it matters now. Grow up.
Yeah.
Let people tell you the truth about who you've become.
Yeah.
Unpack it.
Love it.
Hug the cactus.
Hug that cactus. So profound. You know, often I hear, you know, and I'll even tell my clients, you want me to be honest or nice? Because they're typically not the same. Because being honest doesn't always feel nice.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, that actually is being nice, because it's going to save your life. It's going to make you better. It's going to cause you to change. Right? If you don't wake up to that, then what? Right? And if we keep blaming our past, we'll never get anywhere, right?
Yep. Todd, love is truth. We hear probably one of the most overused words in the English dictionary is love.
Yeah.
When I was incarcerated, hey, homeboy, handshake, I love you. In prison, when we're handing each other a shank, homeboy, I love you. 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 Calling mom and dad collect from prison on my fourth term.
On your fourth term.
At the end of the conversation, mom and dad, don't forget to send the money on my books. I love you. Oh, and next week you're coming to visit me, right? They got to drive 800 miles to come see me or whatever the mileage is, right?
Right.
If I loved them, I would never ask them to do that and risk dying in a car accident. I didn't even know how to love.
Yeah.
So if you want to help influence profound human change, number one, you have to love people. Number two, you have to tell them the truth. If all you do is tell people the truth, it could be mean, right?
You're right. Yeah.
If all you do is love people unconditionally, that is permission to continue with the same behavior. But when love and truth come together simultaneously and the people you're serving know that you love them, now you can tell them the truth.
Yeah.
Unequivocal truth.
Yeah.
And watch what happens.
That's powerful. I love that. Man,
it's the truth.
It's the truth. Hope those listening, did that sink in, man? That's sinking in, man. Wow, that's
love
powerful.
Is truth.
Love is truth.
Truth is love.
Truth is love. You know, and I think, you know, I remember one time you said a while ago that, you know, I've seen you speak probably 50 times now, and it's always amazing every time. But you said, you know, the definition of love is sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense when I hear it, but as I analyzed it over the years, it's so true at the end of the day. And I often will say, you know, if I love you, I will sacrifice for you. Mm-hmm. My time, my effort, my money, even whatever, I will sacrifice that. But same goes if I love myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I love me, I will sacrifice for me.
Mm-hmm.
I will hug the cactus.
Mm-hmm.
I will go to treatment. I will ask for help. Mm-hmm. I will no longer use these other things as excuses to keep me stuck, right? I'm going to sacrifice my pride, my victim stance, if you will. I'll sacrifice my self-pity because I love me.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that when you are in the self-pity mode. Yeah, often go, I hate myself and I'm no good. And, you know.
It's funny, as we deal with this population, our population, mine and yours, Todd, we're just farther removed from the lifestyle.
Yep.
I often, you know, we'll run across people who are meeting somebody and, you know, they're falling in quote unquote love. And I ask them, are you getting that tingly feeling? And they go, yeah. I go, do you know what that is? It's common sense leaving the body. Right when you get that tingly feeling.
Oh, well, that's good.
I said you have to understand. Yeah. You need to understand the true definition of love, and one word is sacrifice. It's fascinating. As a drug addict and a criminal, I used to tell my family I loved them all the time. They sacrificed for me until they were blue in the face. They almost sacrificed for me until they were in the grave.
Right.
I never sacrificed for them.
Yep.
I didn't understand the definition of the word. And again, it's so overused in our society now.
Love you, love you.
Right. Love is an action. It is not a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It is an action. You don't have to tell somebody you love them if you're showing them. They know it inherently.
Right.
You have to tell somebody you love them regularly when you're not showing them. Because it makes it easier for you to live with yourself.
Whew. There's some truth. That slaps, as the kids would say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wow. You're leaving me speechless. That really hit me hard. I think if people, I mean, I know, okay, this is why I'm a little hesitant right now. I know your thoughts about treatments centers in general. Most of them don't work. Let's be honest. And I'm going to be honest with you back. There's reasons why maybe your average everyday treatment center, the success rates are dismal. And that's just a fact. What are your thoughts on that? Why do you think that, you know, just the standard treatment centers typically aren't effective? you know, and then why maybe the other side academy is a little different.
I think.
Or a lot different.
We'll start with this. I want to challenge anybody who's listening to this podcast right now to find the science that says 30, 60, or 90 days is the optimal time. I want someone to convince me that after 27 years of hardcore drug addiction, 4 prison terms in the state of California, that 30 days would have helped me. Of course it wouldn't have. But those were right. My options.
Yeah, you didn't have any other options.
Right. But then I went to Delancey Street, which was a minimum 2 years long, right? But I stayed 8.5 years in that facility because there is no science that says 30, 60, or 90 days is the optimal time. And it isn't so much the treatment facility as it is the model.
The model.
The model's broken.
Right.
There are some of the most incredible people that I've ever met in my entire life working in treatment facilities. And the reason why I call them incredible is they're working in an industry that fails 97% of the time, yet they get up every day and go to work and try to help save lives in a model that is designed to fail exactly how it is. The dosage effect is true. The longer you're in treatment, the better your odds of success, but we won't fund long-term, right? We only fund short-term. The government should get out of this work
completely.
Altogether,
yeah.
Completely. Stop regulating it. Stop making all the rules. Because what's happened is, in my opinion, academics are the problem. And I know that's going to ruffle some feathers because people go to college and think they got all the answers. But if you went to college and you got a 15-year degree in social work, but you've never done drugs, never lived on the streets, never been to jail, never been to prison, what the heck do you know about it? Now you have an expert with no experience.
Yep.
That's like me watching videos on how to hit the fastball, 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I've watched 1,000 videos. I watched Mike Trout. I watched Rod Carew. I watched Pete Rose.
Yeah.
I still don't know how to hit.
Right.
I have no idea because I haven't stepped foot in the batter's box.
Yeah.
The problem is we've created an industry that is designed to fail on itself. So when I talk about treatment facilities, I don't mean the people because I love you. I love Mark. I love everybody working in treatment because it is exhausting, emotionally taxing, pulling at the heartstrings, difficult work because the model's broken. Mm. It's too short. And the other problem with it is it's based around a funding model.
Right.
You get there, and if you have the $20,000, you can stay. But then when do you have to leave? The vast majority of treatment facilities, you have to leave when the funding's run out. Well, I got news for everybody. If you designate a finite date for someone to be done, you just sign their death warrant. Nobody is ready on a finite date.
Right.
They just have to leave because there's no more funding. That doesn't make them ready.
Right.
You could take 10 million drug addicts. Every single one of them will be done, will be ready to reintegrate back into the community at a different time. So how can you designate an end date for anybody? There is no end date.
Yeah.
But there is a time in our journey of recovery when we've gotten to the point where we can successfully reintegrate back into the community. But it isn't because there's a set date, like 90 days. And on 90 days, you're going to go to outpatient. Outpatient, you'll be there for 90 days. And on the 90th day, you have to go. I'm just leaving because I have to.
Yeah.
Not because I'm ready. So when I talk about treatment facilities, I am not talking about the people there. I'm talking about the model.
Yeah.
The model, in my opinion, is working exactly how it was designed to. And it's fascinating. Most people don't know this, but 50 years ago when treatment facilities popped up across this country, it was roughly 50 years ago. The average length of stay, most people are going to say 30 days. They're wrong. The average length of stay was 28 days because the average American had 2 weeks of vacation and 2 weeks of sick pay.
Yeah.
So the alcoholic that went to the treatment facilities 50 years ago could take off 4 weeks and nobody knew where he was at, go get clean and sober in a 28-day treatment facility. Then TC started popping up in the 60s, Synanon and some other TCs that were 2 years long. They got dirty. Some stuff happened, right? But then the Phoenix House and Amity and some of these Daytop and some of these Synanon and some of these other programs were popping up. And the government came to the Phoenix House and said, oh my goodness, you guys, you're doing incredible work. Here's $20 million. Go start a bunch more. But hold on. Don't make them 2 years. Make them 1 year. You can serve more people. Then 3 years later, here's another $40 million. Open up some more Phoenix houses. Mm. My goodness, you guys are saving so many lives. But can you do it in 6 months rather than 1 year? The government stepped in and destroyed the model. If the government knew how to fix this problem, they never would have created it.
Yeah. Wow.
The reason why treatment facilities fail so miserably is they're built around a Medicaid model. Medicaid is attached to the government. The government doesn't know their... Can I say the word?
Sure.
Their ass from a hole in the ground when it comes to this. Again, I'll digress to a half hour ago. Is the problem getting better or worse? It is getting exponentially worse. That's the reason why. We need more people like you, like myself, and our colleagues that have lived experience at the table, crafting legislation, designing these treatment facilities, right? Figuring out a way to do it where people can stay as long as they need to.
Yeah.
As long as they need to. That don't have to leave on a prescribed date.
Right.
Let that sink in.
Yeah.
Most of the time when you go to treatment, you have to leave on a prescribed date. Nobody is ready on that date.
Right.
The odds of them succeeding are slim to none.
Yeah.
Again, the model's broken.
Yeah. I agree. I say this all the time to myself and to anyone that will hear me. The recovery world at large has it wrong. Right? It's just, again, I agree with you. The model's broken. And I really believe that we can be fully recovered. I don't buy into that we have to be in recovery the rest of our life.
Right.
I don't look at you, oh, well, Dave's still in recovery. Dude, no, you're recovered. You've changed. You are living. You are who you were supposed to be in the first place and out there just doing it. And I just, anyway, thanks for being so candid on that.
Yep.
That means a lot because.
I think there's something else that I'm going to share that might, you know, cause a little rift. But I believe there's a difference between clean and sober and whole person change.
Same.
And what I mean by that is when I was in the heat of my addiction and I get arrested, the cops can take me and they can put me in a cell. In isolation, I have no contact with anybody.
Yeah.
I'm in the hole, I'm in a cell, I'm by myself for a year. I get fed through a little slot in the door by a robot that brings my tray, so I have no human contact, right? What am I when I'm in that cell? I am clean and sober. The day I get out, I go use.
Yep.
So getting clean and sober by itself is not the answer.
Not the answer, yep.
Whole person change, right? Going someplace because what got me in that cell was being a liar and a cheater and a thief. And that's why I got arrested. If we don't learn to address those behaviors and then put us in an environment where we get called on those behaviors and get the opportunity to change them, that's whole person change. When you experience whole person change, you get clean and sober for free. And when you become the best version of yourself, you will not choose drugs again.
Right.
That's how I see the problem.
Amen, my friend. That's spot on. I love it. You know, I'll often ask people sitting right at where you're sitting, the client, what's the definition of sober? And I'm not kidding you, almost 10 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10 go, I have no idea. I go, we walk around even saying the word and the definition says the periods in between using.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say I'm sober, I'm already saying I'm in the period before I relapse.
Yeah.
Words matter. Words have power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. Well, they've been in treatment their whole lives. And I say, what's the definition of sober? And they'll say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That also fascinates me.
It is crazy.
We just get, there's the model, the system. We throw someone in it. They're in it, man. They're getting inundated by the words. You got to say it this way. And they just hear, oh, that's how you're supposed to say it. And they don't even know what's going on.
Let me share this with you, right?
Please.
People are going to probably laugh at this, but hold on. Yeah. I got you. Todd's laughing at me right now. Is he? God. How you doing, buddy? Todd, meet God. God, meet Todd. Really? Are you serious? God told me right now he has the cure for addiction and the cure for... The cure for addiction and the cure for criminal behavior. Could you imagine if God came down and said, I'm solving the problem that none of you...
Yeah.
people can solve. Could you imagine if today drugs were non-existent, crime was non-existent... our economy would collapse. Law enforcement, jails, prisons, sheriffs, the courts, DAs, public defenders, lawyers, treatment facilities, big pharma, hospitals, counselors, therapists, doctors. Could you imagine if God solved the problem right now and there was never another drug used or a crime committed? What would happen to our economy?
Wow.
It's a problem that people don't talk about this. And I don't think they're sitting behind a curtain going, how can we make this worse? But I do believe it's difficult to get people to understand something that their salary depends on them not understanding.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I think to some degree, this is a problem that is self-perpetuating,
mm-hmm.
sometimes intentionally.
Yeah.
I think the system is designed to fail or work exactly how it isn't.
Wow.
Could you imagine what would happen to our economy? You and I wouldn't be sitting here. We'd be out of work.
We would.
I'd have to be digging a hole someplace, laying pipe in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
Driving a truck or something.
I'd have to come along with you.
Right. But people look at me when I say that sometimes. They're like...
Well, again, we're talking truth again.
Yes.
If we're being honest, if we knew what was going on behind the scenes, so to mm-hmm. speak, I think that's the facts.
And I think there's some wonderful people trying to help solve this
for
problem.
Sure.
But I think those wonderful people aren't close enough to the consequences of the bad decisions they're making to understand that it's not working. I think the people up at the ivory tower, the people at the Capitol, I mean, come on, if you're a legislator, you went to school and you know how to lobby and you know the law. But what do you truly know about a drug addict criminal like I was? What do you truly know about me? Nothing. Yeah. You know nothing.
Right.
Nothing. I was in California this last June or July. I help an organization called the National Association of Women Judges. And I've become quite close with many of the judges. And they actually help the inmates at Los Colinas Detention Center.
Mm.
I go there every year, and I'd be the keynote speaker, and then I do some workshops on the inside of the institution. And I was having dinner with some judges, and I won't name the judge, but I'm having dinner, and she's eating, and I was talking about Cerdeños. She looked at me, she goes, Dave, what's a Cerdeño? This is a judge in Southern California. California prisons are largely comprised of Cerdeños, Norteños, Bloods, Crips, White Power, Skinheads. That's your prison system in California. She is a judge, a criminal judge on the bench that does not know what a Cerdeño is. Wow. So now you've got these Hispanic gang members that are coming before you. You have no idea what you're dealing with. None. None.
That's scary.
I looked at her. I go, you should put your fork down. Put your gavel down, go to prison for 6 months and live there and learn what they can't teach you in college. One of the problems we have is academics trying to help a population they know nothing about. All the way to that level.
Dang.
I was floored when she said she didn't know what a Cerdeño was.
I bet.
In California.
Yeah.
In San Diego.
That is fascinating.
There's 40 some odd prisons in California. Gang activity is huge. She did not know what the word meant.
Wow. Dang. That's alarming.
It is alarming.
Yeah.
And you know, here's the other funny thing. When you think about who's on the bench, when you think about judges, before the judge took the bench, what was he or she? A lawyer.
A lawyer.
Almost exclusively, every judge was a defense attorney, a prosecutor, a public defender, a lawyer of some sort. And then the opportunity came up to apply for a judgeship.
Yeah.
Right? And if you went to school to become a lawyer, what did you study?
The law.
So when you become a judge, what do you know?
Just the law.
What do you know about human behavior?
None.
It's the wrong people making decisions for us.
Wow.
And boy, do they not like to hear that. But the reality of it is this. If I need brain surgery because I have a tumor, who am I going to see? A brain surgeon. I'm going to see somebody who specializes in that. Judges were lawyers. Heck, it could have been corporate law, right?
Yeah.
Before they became a judge. But what do you know about a human being who's had years of drug addiction, years of incarceration if you haven't ever experienced it? So you start reading. But again, you can only learn so much when you're reading.
Yeah.
Reading identifies the problem, but doesn't give you the opportunity to experience the problem.
Exactly. No, 100%. Wow. That is alarming.
And we wonder why the problem's getting worse.
Yeah. Wow. Well, the beautiful thing is there are some answers out there, and the Other Side Academy is one of those answers. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Yeah. For those who may not know what the Other Side Academy is, will you just explain that to our listeners? Yeah.
The Other Side Academy is a 30-month minimum residential life skills and vocational training school for the most lost among us. Our average student has been arrested 25.6 times. Mm. Right now in Salt Lake, we have about 165 students living on property. When I say students, I got about 130 students, 25-ish staff members, and the rest are graduates in graduate housing.
Yeah.
But it is a long-term residential life skills or vocational training school, and it is completely free. We don't take any money from the government at all. Nothing from the city, nothing from the county, nothing from the state, nothing from the feds, no Medicaid dollars, right, to go there. We don't take any money at all. We keep the government as far away from us as we possibly can. We generate all of our own revenue through our social enterprises, our moving company, our thrift boutiques, our storage company, our construction company. That allows us to do what's best for our students and allow them to stay in the mode of practice as long as they need to.
They need it, yeah.
And those social enterprises is the petri dish for change, because now every day they're going to work on those social enterprises, and that work component they need to learn. Get up, go to work, be on time, go to break, come back on time, go to lunch, come back on time, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Have a good attitude, go home, rinse and repeat until you've learned how to work, because all drug addicts think they know how to work, but they've had 100 jobs and lost 101.
Yeah, right.
Right? And I say 101 because they're just going to lose the next one.
So true.
So it's an opportunity for people to come and learn to live life on life's terms. What I often say about the Other Side Academy is it's a micro community getting you ready for the macro community. And I think the difference between a TC, which is a therapeutic community, and any other treatment facility is it's long, it's structured, and it has all the elements and all the components of real life.
Yeah.
Work, feedback, expectations, responsibilities, in spades, on steroids.
Right.
Right. And that work piece is so critical, because I could have gone to treatment, and when I leave treatment, I'm walking down the street looking for a job with a criminal record, with my pants sagging and my hat on crooked. At the Other Side Academy, by the time you graduate, you will have worked in 3 or 4 of the different social enterprises, maybe working for you, Todd, and that person loved you as a supervisor, worked for me, and they hated me. But you still have to go to work. And you can't quit your job, stop paying your rent, and then pick up drugs again because your life's a mess because of the decisions you're making. So it gives them the opportunity of learning how to do hard things no matter what. And if you don't choose, if you don't learn how to choose hard things will choose you.
Mm. Wow. Well, I can testify of the Other Side Academy and the power that's there, the love, if you will, the truth that gets said there.
Mm.
We've sent a lot of people from Wasatch to that program, and I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough to be a speaker there a few times. And every time I walk away from there, I'm so uplifted and so blown away that here's these hardcore, quote unquote, criminals who are changing their life. You talked about a whole person change. They're not just, you know, getting clean and sober. They're truly changing their life on every level.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to watch. I want to read for those, you have the Other Side Academy beliefs. I'm just going to read these. Number one is you alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. Number two, make and keep promises. Number three, self-reliance. There is no free lunch. Four, impeccable honesty. Number five, act as if. I love that one. Act as if until you become. Number six, embrace humility. Number seven, each one teach one. The one we just talked about. Number eight is 200% accountability. 9 is forgiveness. 10, boundaries. 11, we are faith friendly. And number 12, pride in the work. And the foundation of all that is love, which you've talked so beautifully about today.
Yeah.
I love those. It's so spot on. And I've got it right here on my little podcast desk. I look at it often. I read them to my clients even here. Because again, I love what you do. I support what you do. You guys are doing amazing work. And for those who know nothing about the Other Side Academy, look it up. You just go do a web search. You'll see the Other Side Academy. You'll see a bunch of talks Dave's done. He's been on a million podcasts. He's done a million talks. He's around the world doing amazing things. So, but yeah, the Other Side Academy, next level stuff, man. Joseph Grenny, top notch.
Yep.
right? I remember when you told him, when he asked you, hey, you want to do this? And you're like, yeah, I'll do it if you don't quit when it gets hard.
If you don't quit in 6 months when it gets hard. That. He still teases me every
once
in a
while. He's probably like, what?
Yeah, he'll go, Dave, you said this was going to be easy. I said, yeah, right.
Well, hey, I want to read a couple quotes to you and just want to hear your thoughts on what it means to you when you hear this. So this first quote is by Dipen Parmar. Here's the quote. The magic you're looking for is in the work you're avoiding.
Gosh, if that doesn't go back to the truth or go back to hugging the cactus.
Hugging the cactus.
The magic you're looking for, if you don't hug that cactus and you're not honest with yourself about who you've become, you'll never experience the magic.
Wow.
It is in what we're avoiding. If we're being dishonest with our significant other, it's never going to get better until we're honest. If we're cheating at work, it's only a matter of time. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're living a life that's less than integrous, it's only a matter of time. You have to repeat.
The magic you're looking for is the work you're avoiding.
It's the work you're avoiding.
Yeah.
And it's almost always internal.
Yeah. I love that. This next quote is by Neil Strauss, and it's a little longer, but it's beautiful. One of the biggest mistakes you can make is believing that love is finding the right person. In reality, love is about becoming the right person. Don't go looking for the person you want to spend the rest of your life with. Become the type of person you want to spend the rest of your life with. The people who deserve you will naturally gravitate towards you.
Yep. You know, it's fascinating that you have that as one of the quotes, and we were talking about love earlier.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody thinks. You will never love anybody else in your entire life the way they deserve to be loved if you don't learn how to love you.
Mm.
It has to start with self. And I know that sounds cliche-ish, but it's so true. If you're dishonest with yourself, if I'm sitting here as a dishonest person and I'm a liar and I'm a cheater and I'm a thief and I'm doing all these things and I don't like who I am, I cannot love somebody else.
Right.
Right? You just can't. You can't. Have to love self. And if you do, then it's going to, it's naturally, it's just going to come out of you. You're just going to know how to love other people.
Yeah.
But it has to start with self.
I agree. You just carry yourself differently when you love you. Mm-hmm. You just do. You show up differently and people can feel it. Like they can just feel it without you saying anything. Mm-hmm. That's why you command a room when you walk into it, man. You can just feel it. You don't even have to say a word, Dave. Here's one more. This is by Alex Harmozy. Confidence without evidence is delusion. You don't become confident by shouting affirmations in the mirror, but by having a stack of undeniable proof you are who you say you are. Give yourself so much proof that you are the version of the self you want to be, and you'll become them. Outwork your self-doubt.
Mm.
What do you think of that one?
So strong. I think what I hear in there is just be who you profess you are, or don't profess anything.
Right.
Just be the best version of yourself.
Yeah. Wow, I love that. Couple more, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
This one, you know, I don't know who the author of this is, so forgive me, but it says, the reason why people struggle when they leave treatment is because their thinking has not changed. What do you think of that one?
Whole person change. Good, it's good. We can't make this up.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to clean and sober. So what? In my opinion, exactly. I say it. So what if you're clean and sober, if you haven't changed?
Right. Yeah.
If you don't change your thinking and you don't view the world differently and you don't learn to make good choices in your life, you will use again.
Wow. Okay, one more. Okay, thanks for letting me read these to you. But this is from James Allen. James Allen's one of those giants in my life. He's the one that wrote As a Man Thinketh.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of the most amazing people I've ever studied. But here's a quote from him. When one has reached the lowest point of sorrow, when weak and exhausted and overcome with a sense of powerlessness, he cries to God for help, and there comes no answering comfort and no succor. Then, discovering the painfulness of sorrow and the insufficiency of prayer alone, he is ready to enter the path of self-renunciation, ready to purify his heart, ready to practice self-control, ready to become a spiritual athlete and to develop that divine and invincible strength which is born of self-mastery.
Mm. Yep. Self-mastery. That is where I think most human beings fall short.
Yeah.
We, very few people, you look at Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
it's safe to say he's one of the most brilliant men alive.
Right.
I also, at least in the videos I've seen and the talks I've heard him give, he has great self-awareness, incredible self-discernment. Hard to find people that are extremely intelligent with good self-awareness. Right. Usually it's one way or the
one
other.
One or the other, yeah.
That makes him 1 in 10 million. Self-mastery, I think, at least in my opinion, really comes down to one thing, your ability to control your emotions. And I think it's imperative for all of us to learn to think greater than how we feel.
Mm.
I think for most human beings, the vast majority of decisions that we make are made based on how we feel. Now, unpack your history and ask yourself all the times you were pissed off or you were mad. Every single decision you made, you'll regret.
Right.
We have to learn to think greater than how we feel. No matter what we're going through, no matter how angry we are, no matter how mad we are, no matter how hurt we are, stop and do not make any decisions. Think it through. Think greater than how you feel and see how your life changes.
Wow. Beautifully said. Self-mastery.
Self-mastery.
Right. Emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. EQ, baby.
Right. EQ.
EQ. What is your emotional quotient?
I love it. If someone's listening to your voice right now, Dave, who's struggling, they're in a dark place, or they have a loved one who's just lost, but they're just in a place where they're not sure if they can get out of it, and they're hurting. You've already shared some amazing things. What would you tell that one person right now who is in that dark place?
You can get out of it. We tell ourselves a story. I can't stop. I can't get out of it. Yes, you can. If you got arrested right now and they put you in jail, you would have no choice. Choice was the operative word.
Mm.
It's easy to do when you're forced to do it. But if you want it bad enough, you'll find a way to do it without being forced to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what dark place you're in, no matter how bad your addiction is, no matter what you're going through, ask for help. You alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. It's number one for us. You alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. Ask for help.
Yeah.
For once in your life, raise your hand and say, I need help. I guarantee you somebody will show you the way.
Yeah.
You can get out of it. If you're telling yourself you can't get out of it, it's just an excuse not to.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
That's powerful. And thank you for being here, honestly. I know you're a busy man. A better way of saying it, you're just really full. Your schedule is always full, but you're doing good things. You're trying to make a difference in this world. And I admire the way you carry yourself and the way you show up to life. It really
Thank
is.
You,
you're one of those giants in my life. I hope you know that. And I'm grateful to know you. Wasatch is grateful to know you. And I'm so thankful that you were just here 2 days ago speaking the truth to our clients in such a way that they listened and they heard it.
Mm.
I got letter after letter after letter after letter of what our clients took away from your talk. And it was just amazing. So thank you for all you do. Thanks. I know I'm sure you get tired at times, and you've been banging this message for a long time now, man. But boy, you're dedicated, and you are intelligent. You have energy. And what was the third one?
Integrity.
And you're the man of integrity. I mean, that is your foundation, man. So I'm grateful to be holding on to your coattails.
I am grateful to be in lockstep with you, Todd.
Well,
I love you, brother. And
I love you too.
When
I
you
really
ask
do.
Me to come and do these things, the answer is always going to be yes.
That's what's so beautiful. Thank you. Like you're always there for me. So thank you. And I hope you know I'm there for you as well. And thanks for always opening the door at the Other Side Academy to let me come speak to your group there. I always leave just so edified and just like walking on water. It feels like,
Hair's on fire when we
right,
leave. Huh?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, my friend. Guys, that was beautiful. I hope you guys just felt what I felt today. I'm sure you did. If you have a loved one who's struggling, if you have anyone in your life that just is stuck in a rut, send them the link to this episode and tell them to listen to Dave. Please, just listen, because at the end of the day, Dave's right. If you need help, raise your hand and just ask. People will come out of the woodwork to help you. If you are stuck in addiction, criminal behavior, look into the Other Side Academy. It doesn't cost a dime, but it's going to test you on a level that you can't even imagine. But you will look back and be so grateful that you did. Please do that. please reach out to them. Shout out to Joseph and his beautiful wife, and for you, Dave, for just taking a chance and putting this all together for people who, you know, you got 130 students now. I mean, how many have graduated now?
Oh, gosh.
At this point, I mean, do you know a number?
I
mean, it's so
hundreds,
big.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
And it
which
took
is
a while
amazing.
For us to get graduates because we were, you know, we're 2.5 years long and some have stayed four or 5 years, but hundreds of successful graduates.
Yeah. Well, I'll put the link to your TED Talk and also to the TOSA website and so people can, you know, get to know you better and to get to know the Other Side Academy better. But,
great.
I mean, you're very well known here. But those who may not know Dave, please just research him and study him. You guys, you won't regret that. So I love you, Dave. And I love all my sponsors. And I pinch myself here that I get to do this. Are you kidding me? This is great. Mm-hmm. I've been edified again. So love you guys. Stay strong. Reach out, raise your hand if you need help. We love you and we're here for you. Take care.